A listener note. The safety information discussed in this podcast are our views based on our personal firsthand experiences. Each safety situation presents unique risks, and the solutions discussed in this podcast should not take the place of thorough risk assessments or evaluations based on your specific circumstances. Thank you. Welcome to Safe, Efficient, Profitable, a worker safety podcast, where we break down real problems from real situations and discuss realistic solutions. And here are your hosts, owners of Allen Safety LLC, Joe and Jen Allen.
Be professional. Why we do this today?
Safety on a Sunday.
Good day. You can already tell this one's going to be a little different, can't you? We got some laughing going on, and this is some kind of podcast we're supposed to be putting together today. And if you're watching us live on, not live, I guess we're recorded, aren't we? If you're watching us on YouTube, you're like, why are they sitting like that? Well, we're sitting across at a table here.
It's been a day.
We got headphones. It's a Sunday, and we're trying something different here. So
been a day. Just going through the outline on a Candyland box.
Yeah. She said, how are you going to edit it? I don't know. And I was too lazy to go get something. So it was a Candyland box in front of me, and I used it because...
Ergonomics.
Yeah. If you do anything on a Sunday, you play Candyland.
Ergonomics.
So. All right. Here we go today. What makes a trainer an expert is the topic today. And we got some stuff we want to talk about.
I got a lot to say about it.
Let's talk about it. Well, the first thing is you got to decide, do you want internal or external trainers? Those of you who don't know, we actually train for a living. For those of you who are just now listening, like, who are these people? Well, we train for a living and we are an external trainer, but we also don't believe that everything is done by external.
Yeah.
We believe that sometimes internal is better. And the first thing you got to do, no matter what, is figure out what you're going to do and start breaking that down.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you decide? So maybe you've got some spot work you're going to be doing, or maybe you're electrical or forklift. I believe I'm a pretty good trainer. Most of my team thinks they're a pretty good trainer. I know about hot work, but I'm not a good trainer at hot work because I don't know all the things about hot work or all the things that would make it be good or bad when they're doing it. So that doesn't make me, it kind of makes me an expert, but not really.
I would say it would make you competent to be able to identify if there's a gap,
correct.
Not to necessarily train on all
that's correct.
The potential risks and how to recover
from. I'm with you on that because arc flash, I know how to pick out the clothing. I know how to wear the clothing. I know what stickers look like.
MCC bucket.
No, but I do not know how to train on that. Do I understand the concept? You bet, but I'm not the expert at that. So you've got to figure out what that expert is. It could be an internal person or external. It's not just an absolute, well, these people are better or these people aren't. I've seen some people internally do way better in some of the subjects than I've ever seen.
Well, I think it also depends on your industry, right? So, I mean, based on what you're doing and where you're working, you may be kind of forced into becoming the expert.
That's correct.
Like at my farms.
Yeah.
You know, biosecurity, not everybody that's an expert can go in. So
absolutely.
We have to figure out how to transfer that information and make the site manager an expert because not everybody can go in every day when they've got something going on.
Yeah, for those of you who don't maybe understand on the live side, whether it be hogs, chickens, turkey, there's a bunch of rules and you just can't have anyone go in and do work tomorrow.
Right.
There's a bunch of rules.
Biosecurity stuff.
So you take the same risk that you would happen in a plant and you say, right now we have a problem and have maintenance come out. You can't do that. The farms. So you gotta train people differently. So you may have expert or tier system levels, but it could be, you know, how are you going to do that? So you have to look at who you're going to train on that.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, you know, if you've got a company-wide trainer too, they're bouncing in and out of maybe a whole lot of different locations. So they may be going into case readies and harvest plants and mills and feed mills. And so that's really also kind of changing whether that person's an expert or not based on, you know, how well they understand how to apply that information at all of those different locations.
Absolutely.
So
I know there's a lot of companies that are trying to do crossover for even like their corporate safety people because it's hard. It's hard to manage if you don't know those businesses, but it's even harder to try to train.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of time to learn some of this. So for example, is the training person an expert? You know,
train the trainer person. Does that make, I went to a train the trainer class.
Yeah.
Is that going to make me an expert?
I think if you go to a trainer class, 16 hours, 24 hours, or 2 million hours, if it doesn't relate to what you're going to take back to organization, even if you don't know how to be a trainer, some of these trainers, the trainer classes, they're not wrong. They mean well, but they spend the whole time maybe teaching how to drive a forklift. Okay, what you need to be training them is how to train someone else how to drive a forklift.
How to be an actual trainer. Yeah. So, I mean, I guess from my side, getting any certificate and saying that now makes me an expert, or any certification like a CSP, that doesn't guarantee that I'm now an expert, because I think that there's a couple of different parts to that, right? Like you have to have the information and understand the subject matter. Absolutely. But you also have to understand your business to be able to relate it to who you're training.
I'd been in the military. I had done all those skill sets. I had a bachelor's degree in one of the best programs in the country, Oklahoma State, for those you don't know. And I've done about everything you can think of, from firefighting to grow up on a cattle ranch and all these things. And I've got certification. I thought I was ready to go. I walked into a plant, and the first week I was there, I was like, there's no way I'm going to work for some of this. No,
I am not ready to go.
There's a lot of subjects. I went down the list. There was more that I wasn't an expert at than I was. And I had that long background in history.
Well, as I'm saying, so I think most of the time people are like, well, this has to do with safety, so the safety manager is the expert at this. Not necessarily. I mean, you know, you take something like lockout, tagout, or confined space assessments. If that safety manager isn't mechanically inclined, they don't understand the mechanics, they don't understand, you know, what their maintenance teams are going to be doing for PMs or troubleshooting, well, then they're not maybe the expert to be the person that would conduct authorized training for a lockout type situation.
Absolutely. For those you don't know, part of my degree is engineering. I can't do anything electrical or plumbing at this house, but theoretically I can. And I've read a bunch of books and watched stuff on it, but it's that's not my thing.
I'm also a safety person. So I am the person that said he's not an expert.
Anyway, so that's how we go there. So you gotta look at the main thing you want to do is that you got to know your subject, and you got to make sure that any training you do as expert, you don't increase risk, you want to decrease risk. So when I'm saying what makes me, if they don't make my risk go down, whoever's doing the training, then that's the first problem. I have to reduce risk when I'm training.
Well, and when I think about risk, I think of like that weird gray area, right? So there's always this gray area that's kind of the undercurrent. So when we have folks trained that maybe aren't well versed at what the jobs are, or they don't understand the equipment or how, you know, the job interrelates to the environment around them, there's this weird gray area. It's like, well, everything's fine during production, but then it goes crazy when we do sanitation.
I got to tie off during sanitation. Where am I going to do that?
It goes crazy during a PM when we're doing a project on the weekend. And it's that weird gray area that doesn't get captured. And that's where I think that, you know, that's where the expert part comes in. That an expert knows what that gray area is and can address it with each group, as opposed to just kind of glossing over it.
Absolutely.
Well, we won't talk about that. And if there's a problem, you should bring it up, because they don't.
Well, you brought up sanitation. You know, if you listen to some of the other podcasts, I spend a lot of time in sanitation. And it's not that it's good, bad, or indifferent, but my crew has not spent as much as me. So what happens is I'm the expert for our company for sanitation. I'm not saying the other people don't have the knowledge, but they're not the subject matter expert. Now, as we go through and you look at these podcasts and others, you'll hear that we have different people on our team that are different experts of stuff. Even our team is broke down for different categories of it. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I mean, you know, and going back to identifying who's the right person to do the training in the area and kind of the lockout, tagout, authorized, you know, we go to different places. I've got augers locked out all different ways. We've got them MCCs, and some are, you know, done by a disconnect, but they tell you have to go to the MCC room, or you got a
farm where they have a feeder and that auger jams up. The locking out's not the hazard; it's the residual energy.
Yeah, you've never done that. ESOPs are acceptable for lockout tagout, which they're not, by the way. But
right, but so I may be able to manage that system if I'm the manager. That doesn't mean I'm the expert at that lockout procedure for how you do that task.
Well, and you know what, PSM is like that too. Honestly, yeah. You know, we've got PSM folks that they are managing a system, but they may not be the technical expert in regards to
absolutely
how to physically write the task procedure for a specific job task on the PSM side.
And they don't have to be, but they have to acknowledge that there's somebody else that is though.
They've got to know to defer to that person. So I think that's huge too.
Yeah, we, you know, the I was doing confined space this last week at a plant down south, and they did a great job, everything they were doing. And I was looking at some procedures, and just we ended up taking six different ways we were figuring out how to enter that space and get out of it. If I don't have all the people there who literally do it daily, which is who I asked for the class, then I could have never been successful in figuring out how to do it. I have to let them do the job the way they do it. And they were almost like an expert for me for that space, but I'm the expert given the data or the training. So even though you may be a good trainer or maybe the expert, still rely on those sources that there's other people out there may have the data. So,
well, and I think a big part of it too is just having done it before, right? So if you've never actually gone into confined space and you've never felt how that feels, or you've never actually physically had to lock out and perform it, I mean, maybe you shouldn't be the one doing that, right? I mean, because there's just things that you learn by virtue of going through the steps of physically doing the action. Absolutely. In different environments and different circumstances. But, you know, I kind of question, is that person an expert if they've not gone through some of that and had some of that physical hands-on time themselves?
Absolutely. My biggest fear for 20-something years ago when I started being a consultant, I would lose touch with day-to-day operations and I would not know what it was really like. For those you don't know us, we still deal with live leaks and we still deal with confined spaces and we do them all the time. And I'm fanatic about it because I'm afraid if we don't, then we've lost that knowledge or lost that edge. And then I don't think we're an expert no more.
Right. Right. Well, and you know, that's the thing is that if, you know, you've got a safety manager, for instance, and maybe they used to run ops, but they haven't really gone on the floors lately. They've got other stuff going on or whatever. It's knowing the time of maybe we need to start training somebody else and doing some of that succession planning too, to create someone else to be the expert and to fill in that gap. Because if they're not going to the floor anymore and they're not out in the field, they're not going to the farm or whatever, they just can't get out there. Maybe they're not the expert for that specific department or that area anymore.
Absolutely. If you've got some of these large companies have hundreds of locations or they're spread all over the country with labor being so restricted, there's no way people can get there more. So they have to be an expert. Part of that is training that next level expert that can do it.
Yep, the site specific person. Well, and I think another part of it is, you know, if you've got people and you're spending 50% of your day while they're on site with you, they're supposed to be training or auditing or doing whatever it is that they're doing. They spend half of their time asking you questions and trying to understand your equipment and learn your business because they've never been there. That to me is a trigger point too, of like maybe this person doesn't know what's going on, or they have to, absolutely, you know, spend a bunch of time. They keep upselling me on stuff and they're like, well, you know, we could do this training, but you know, you guys don't have this gear. And so if you just got this gear from me, you know, then we'd be able to do it. And it's like, are you trying to sell me gear?
Are we doing an infomercial or are you being an expert?
Right.
Yeah. So, cause that's my thing. For those you don't know, we don't sell any products or anything, because I think to be an expert, you have to be able to look at realistic expectations and realistic solutions. And I think people don't always, if they have the wrong agenda. So to be a true expert and to take care of that in person, that in task, you have to be able to look at it open-minded. And part of that is, you know, when you're looking at, you know, a disconnect, you know, people will tell me so many different ways they can lock out a disconnect, or so many different ways an expert told them to do something. I don't know. All I know is that you got to stay focused on that moment, make sure it makes sense to you. And so anything I write, anything I do always is a second person there. Even though I'm the person who's managing the system, I'm the expert, I'm still going to train you on lockout or train you in confined space like we did last week. But I still let them show me where to lock out. And we all had degrees as a group. I was just one of the people.
Yeah. So yeah, sometimes it is a group effort, but you know, kind of going back to you know, on the training side instead of like more of the procedure side, I definitely agree. You want a bunch of people that are location experts when you're writing procedures, because they know that equipment better than anybody. They're servicing it every week.
Well, I don't think you can do like a video or PowerPoint for some of the stuff. I mean, the stuff we did last week, you know, if I would have came in and been a trainer last week, it was a place I normally don't go to. So I've only been there a couple times. Well, the very first time I went there was no bill for some of the stuff I did, because I don't think it's right to bill those people for me to understand the business, because how can I bid the project if I don't understand the business well enough? So what I did is I took time and learned as much as I could about it, reading ahead of time, Googling stuff, actually being on site for part of that. And I didn't charge them for that because I can't give them the information they want and even give them an option if I don't understand it well enough. I could take time to do that. Well,
and part of it is knowing how to relate to them and give examples from their specific departments or industry or whatever they're doing. And that's part of what makes you an expert is being able to pull those out when they keep saying, I'm not getting what you're saying. I don't know what you're saying. And you can come up with that example.
And a video is not going to solve that. So for those you don't know about us, we don't really do any videos or PowerPoint because it's not that it's right, wrong, and different. Everybody has the way they do it. But I've always learned better by physically doing it. And since that's the way I learn, that's the way we teach it. I mean, that's just the way I am.
Well, what my biggest pet peeve of some stuff, which, you know, it was really important to me that anytime we take on a new client that maybe I'm not as well versed in that industry, nothing drives me crazier than when you bring somebody in and they want to keep talking about a different industry. Well, this is how they do it over here.
I wonder how we do it here today.
You go over there and do it then. You're at my plant. Why are you telling me about something that is completely different industry? We can't do any of that stuff.
I want to know tonight how am I
going
to do it.
Yeah, the stuff going on in petrochem, I can't do it on a harvest floor that I'm washing.
Hog barn.
I'm washing down every night. It's not the same thing.
So that's where we're at. So we're at, you know, look at your expert. Think about what makes them expert. Maybe they're internal. Maybe they're external. And then you got some stuff that's stuff that gets some of the weird training things that happen. The expert may say, an example, maybe the expert wants to bring all their own gear. Well, last week where I was like, okay, we're going to use all your gear. And they were like, okay, in the past, we've been training with other people's gear. And my view was, yeah, but you have to use this when I leave, not mine. So you should be trained on your gear. And then what I have to watch is, I know people bring trailers and people bring gear and people bring all this stuff, but there comes a point where it's kind of generic. And after about 20 minutes of it, what is the excitement? Because part of the training of being an expert is to keep people engaged. And part of that is making it relevant. I don't know how you train in some of these systems that people do and keep people bought in all day. But I do know that if I'm training them on their equipment and their stuff, they're a lot more bought in because they're going to use it the next 15 minutes.
They're going in next weekend.
Yeah, last Friday we did. Last Thursday, Friday, I was teaching a course for client space. And literally Friday, they had to borrow some of my gear because they were going into live entry. And some of the guys I just trained Thursday were doing it. So I don't get this luxury of hoping they never go in. They're going to go in or we wouldn't be there training. So let's try. And if you don't do that, if you decide to hire a company and they're third party and they bring gear and stuff, and there's nothing wrong with it. You want to learn general ideas about gear and stuff, whatever, but you still need to go back and train them on your stuff the next day. And right now in my world, no one has any labor and no one has any time. So they don't have that extra step to get it all done. And they lose that time during the training then.
Well, my question becomes like, why are they bringing that though? Sure. Why are they even bringing that to begin with? Is it because they don't know like an air pack or a meter or stuff well enough to be able to just take on whatever the people have? Because that's what it tells me, right? Like if you're not willing to train on whatever the people have, then maybe you're not that comfortable with meters because they all kind of run the same.
Yeah.
Well, SCBAs kind of run the same.
I think especially the last few years, there's been a lot of concepts or ideas about different ways of training. And I'm not saying people did or didn't do training certain ways in the past. All I'm saying is moving forward, when you decide you're going to pick somebody and they call themselves an expert to come to your location, do that task, asking questions.
Yeah.
Asking questions. See, well, how are you going to do it? What are you going to do? Well, how's it going to be relevant to me tonight when we have to go in? And if I can't, if it doesn't, if I can't guarantee that we're good to go and I have to retrain by next week, is that the right fit for your business today?
Well, you know, and another thing, you know, from a lockout tagout authorized standpoint, I've seen like the, you know, the lockout tagout boards, right? You know,
what right. I'm talking about. And I like those because like, they're
that's a good general concept, but I can't use that for my maintenance guy who's locking out something that has four sources.
Yeah, that's the idea of understanding how to do it. And you still got to take them out. You still got to show them the equipment. You still have to walk it through. You still got to show the procedure relates. So the equipment
they've
they're going to do.
Feel like here's where the ball valve is. Here's how I know I've got it good. Here's how long it has to purge out or whatever.
Absolutely.
You know, the same thing goes, I don't know how I compare dropping in the top of a trailer to climbing in something with an auger in the bottom and I've got to watch where I put my foot or I'm going into a mixer blender or going into a receiving pit or something. I don't know how
this pit we went into Friday was real dirty. And I asked them, is it always dirty when you go in? They're like, yeah. Well, then that's how we want to train in it.
Yeah.
I didn't want it to be clean and perfect. I wanted it to be, it was 100 degrees and it was gross and we were sweating and it was dirty and we were filthy. I said, that's what we want.
That's what it is. That's what a boiler entry is. That's what a DAF entry is.
We got a great picture of everybody literally with stuff all over him. I said, that's a good training moment because that's how it's going to be.
Go in any space in rendering. You won't be clean when you come out unless it's brand new.
Yeah. And so that's the deal. You know, you got things like subjects, you know, so you got to teach, like I had to teach a harness last week. We may have to teach an air pack or teach something else. Well, you got to make sure that that's not counted or other things. You know, if I'm teaching someone on a harness for confined space, I'm talking about how it relates to that subject, not all harness training, all fall protection for the location needs now. No, it's for that subject because that subject could have multiple variables tied into that subject.
Yeah, trying to group everything in. We're doing one class for certification, but we're trying to count it for respiratory, lockout, elevate. We're trying to, like, you know, bandwagon.
The certificate's got 52 things on it.
Yeah. No, the question is, are we really, if we're doing all those other subjects, are we really meeting the intent of the primary subject? Which is, you know, find space for this instance. But, you know, are we really covering what we need to for respiratory and elevated work and lockout truly for the entire rest of the scope of what that person's doing? I mean, we see that all the time with high angle rescue and stuff too. That's like, and they couple it together and like, well, we just had confined space training. We just, you know, did all this stuff with ropes. And I'm like, well, that has nothing, hanging off the side of a building has nothing to do with going in a hole.
Yeah. And I know people will make comments right, wrong, or different after we're done with this. But I'm going to tell you something. You've got to evaluate the actual job you want them to do.
Yeah.
And you know, I've had just like 40 hours training. Well, we always do 40 hours training for hazmat. I'm like, well, I don't know where it says the way you're doing it here, you need 40. You know, there's other parts of the law. It's just not one part. You know, and that's what's amazing. Whether you take a confined space or hazmat or forklift or lockout or elevator work, whatever subject you want to take, you have to break down what is the goal of that subject and accomplish that goal. If you can't accomplish that goal, then it's irrelevant if they were an expert or not, because they weren't an expert to your people and they didn't communicate to your people.
Right. You're really trying to, what is the goal? And then what are the skill sets the trainer needs to have in order to meet that goal? And then that's how we kind of decide who our expert's going
to
be.
Absolutely. So your expert, to wrap up here, could be internal, external. Your expert could be somebody who's really great at the subject, and you know, that could be whether through time or history or certifications or training, can be anything. But you have to evaluate what that expectation is, what that goal is, and then find the right piece of the puzzle that meets your goal. And then that's how you start determining. And like I said, sometimes it's internal, sometimes it's external, sometimes a little bit of combo of both.
Yeah.
But you need to manage that as a system and go from there. So, all right, before I close out, I'll let Jen close out. You got anything else?
I don't. That's it.
All right, well, that was ours today. Thank you, everybody, for signing in.
We'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to Safe, Efficient, Profitable, a Worker Safety Podcast. If you like what you heard here, please take a moment to write us a quick review, like, subscribe, and share our podcast so that others can find us. For questions or to request topics that you'd like to hear on our next show, please visit us at www.allen-safety.com. Thank you.